Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Remember, we're on 434-1790. I'm going to try to move the program along a little more briskly. In the meantime, we just have some breaking news from Georgetown that the High Court has thrown out the injunction blocking the recount. One could argue it's victory for the... Victory for the PPP Civic, and apparently also victory for the coalition government, since they have also apparently supported the idea of a recount. The injunction was brought by Yunita Moore, who appears to be affiliated to government, but certainly is not speaking on their behalf in this regard. So long and short of it is that the road has now been paved for a full recount of the votes in the Guyana election, and that is certainly good news. I am supremely confident that there will be yet another roadblock that is thrown before that recount can start and finish, because it is fairly clear to me that there are some powers in Guyana that don't want those votes to be counted a second time. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Peter, let me quickly run through.
Please wrap up quickly because we are being told that we're going too slowly.
To what's happening.
Okay.
But the best solution is the reconk.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, somebody has told me since I was holding on. MoneyGram and Fairchild Street is also an avenue where you can have the money sorted out.
Okay, all right.
Okay, let me, you know, I initially have been calling for the utilities to ease the persons who have to rush the try and pay to keep the utilities on. You know, I've asked for that earlier, Clark.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not satisfied still that I'm hearing from the Barbados State and Paul as they would like. I just heard from a lady from Flo, Miss Marlene Seeley, and the NPC. The long and short of what I want to establish is the utilities people live from paycheck to paycheck, pension check to pension check, and if there's going to be a waiver, I'm not saying they must be exempt, but they'll have some agreement incrementally that they can pay after this thing should blow over. But for now, they need to hear and relieve that stress of having to try to get to pay this money. I don't know if you see what I'm saying. Okay. And my last comment, I'll have to cut because I wouldn't want to go on a political thing now.
Yeah.
The bank is asking that they have a package, but for a 6-month moratorium for existing loans and mortgages, et cetera. But the persons must come in individually and explain their plight and then have that arrangement made with them specifically.
Okay. All right, sir.
You
thank you so much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Peter.
Yes, good afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Anthony Trotman here. How are you doing?
Hey, not too bad, Anthony.
Hi, Peter. Okay, 2 points quickly. Unfortunately, I have to follow Rawls. But with respect to the electrical, as you may know, there are various things in the house which run on electricity. Sometimes we don't know if we need it till it goes. So I too, like Raul, would like to see that something be done where a specific electrical company per se can sell in times of emergencies, because someone may have something in their house which unfortunately may go down, which is necessary, and therefore they will need to call the electrician, and so on and so forth. So that's one. The second point, Peter, goes towards a situation that happened yesterday, and I'm particularly upset about, because it involves basically your opening set of comments that you made with respect to pigeons and the way they move around. Yesterday, my son, who is a special needs, had an emergency.
Okay.
I needed to leave home. I needed to go down to the pharmacy, get something for him, because he was in extreme pain. He came back home, still was in pain. I went back to the pharmacy. All the while, I had to leave him with his sister. Now, Peter, it pains me to know that provisions were made so situations like mine could be accommodated. And dare I say, the community of which my son is a part of, which is the disabled community, provisions are made so they can be accommodated. It really hurts me to know that Barbadians would take time now to go out on the road when they have no reason to be, so that someone like Desire would come. And let me say that I have been taught by Desire, and what you see is what you get. He's a very straightforward man. And I don't know him to make threats idly. So I do presume that when he says action will be taken, action will be taken. Now, if you look at it this way, something where it's more restricted in this country will affect people in the disabled community more than anybody else. I have to go and get Pampers. Other people have to go and get medication. And as a result, any further restrictive measures that are taken will cause us undue harm. All the minister, desire, and the chief medical officer were asking is that Barbadians exercise good judgment. Is that so hard? What do you
say? I certainly don't think it should be hard, sir. And like you, I agree that it's a question of us understanding and exercising judgment. Your case was one of the cases which, as you said, the system was designed to ensure that you could still function under extreme circumstances. And I think it's unfortunate, as you said, that there are so many people who are essentially trying to get on top of the system that are clogging it and not making it possible for someone like yourself with an emergency like that to move around. So I'm with you on that 100%.
I do not understand why Bajans have a hard time understanding simple instructions.
You will understand why I feel that at times like these, maybe a bamboo is the solution. I will have people calling, trying to explain to me why this 88-year-old lady needs to travel to Bridgetown. And defending it and believing that they have a right to make a point like that and she has a right to go I'm just not getting it.
You know, Peter, one of the things that Bajans, my father has a particular saying he likes to say, everybody want to go to heaven, but nobody want to die. Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is that every Bajan wants that this virus don't affect them nor anything to do with their family. But because the measures are, as in their opinion, draconian, nobody wants to be uncomfortable. But we're living in a time, Peter, now, where the situation that everybody is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I hear people talking about the borders being closed. It's easy to sit down and be an armchair quarterback mm-hmm. in these kind of times. But the fact of the matter is that the people who were put there, and I know two of them, one is a Commemorian and the other one taught me at Commemore. Dare I say, I trust their judgment as well as the Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. And dare I say that I...
Oh, you're a Commemorian too?
Well, a proud one.
Yeah, proud my condolences, one. Sir.
Well, unfortunately, you didn't get in the pearly gates, but that's okay.
It was about to say the opposite.
Your time mimics mine, but you put a line through it just because you wanted to be like us. But
yeah, we have a little gold speckle.
All I would say, Peter, is that I will ask that Bajans, please, exercise good judgment in moving around, exercise good social distancing, please. Because the next move will not be as comfortable as this uncomfortable position that they're currently in.
Yeah. Okay. And you're very right, sir, that the next step is going to be a step close to Grenada. And I'm hoping that we can avoid going there. I really do.
Well, I think I really think that it will be inevitable. But I do not know if some provision could be made for through the disabled council mm-hmm. where people can be identified so that if they need to move around when things get rougher, because I believe that, mm-hmm. unfortunately, Peter, I don't have much faith in the Barbadian people.
But isn't the disabled, don't you have a good registry for disabled people?
Well,
I think that there's a fairly good registry.
We may not have the facilities
like to help, but at least we know who they are and where they are, don't we?
Well, there are ways to identify them, yes, and there is the registry. I don't know if it is as complete as it should be, and I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of them, but all I would like to say is that I would like some provision to be made so that if things get past the next point, that people like me and others, because I do say I speak for others, whose children are wheelchair-bound, have to be fed through tubes as mine is, that we have the ability to be able to go out during a draconian measure
and take care of
and
your
get
kid.
Things that we need.
The only thing is that you sound to me as though you're one of the more fortunate ones in that you have a vehicle and, you know, you also have the resources
to... That is very true.
And I think the challenge really for the disabled community is that there are a number of people in your situation that don't even have a car.
And that is
it's
true.
Like, how are they going to function under these things? Because they can't just go by
that
the bus, you know,
true.
it's not possible. So,
yes, exactly. So now you see now where the snowball effect continues. And I
have a lot of time. I have a lot of time for the cause and for the fact that you should use this medium to make an important point.
I appreciate that.
We need to be, at a time like this, we need to be acutely aware of the more vulnerable. And the elderly are certainly more vulnerable, but the disabled community are probably the most vulnerable at these times.
Yes, because they rely entirely on able-bodied people to actually help them because they cannot do for themselves. Yeah. We have no provisions in this country for disabled sidewalks. And in fact, don't let me go there. That's another big issue. Yes.
But it's kind of like I've always been told that the reason that you have a hard shoulder is so that you keep it clear so that when there's an emergency, you can reach persons using the hard shoulder. If you allow people to drive on the hard shoulder, it clogs the system up and it makes it difficult when there's a real emergency to reach those people. And that's essentially what you're saying. If you clog the system up with people going to the beach and doing a lot of foolishness, then the accessibility is limited in situations where you absolutely have to go for some reason. So that's what we need to do. We need to clear the hard shoulder. Right.
Correct. Well, right, Peter, so I want to appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me and helping. I hope someone in government listens and can put some things in place.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling, sir. Let's see if we can get one more call in, maybe. Good afternoon and welcome.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, sir.
Greetings, Peter.
Greetings.
Good afternoon to everybody. Mr. Vickham.
Yes, sir.
I can see that you are in agreement with the authorities, the measures the authorities have measured out.
I am, yes.
The lockdown, the distance socializing, etc.
Right.
But are you aware that by being obedient to those measures that you are actually being obedient to God?
Really?
Yeah, because the Bible says at Romans chapter 13, verse 1, let every person be in subjection to the superior authority, for there is no authority except by God. The existing authorities stand placed in their relative positions by God.
Sir, if it makes you feel better to think that, I'm happy with that.
So. Yeah, but what I'm saying Mr. Pivikam, do you believe that you are being obedient to the government and you are unbeliever?
Right.
And yet there are those in Antigua who supposed to be believers are actually disobeying. So this says a lot about you. You understand, Mr. Vickham?
It says even more about them.
You see, that's the point. I am focusing on them.
Right.
You understand?
So, what about this reverend now, Marlon? What's his name? The local reverend that saying that the church is opposed to that. What is your view on him?
All right. Listen to verse 2. Whoever opposed the authority has taken a stand against the regiment of God. And those who have taken a stand against it will bring judgment against themselves.
Okay.
To speak for itself.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on to say, Mr. Vickham, for those rulers who are the government are an object of fear, not to those doing good, you know, but those doing bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, if you want to be free of fear of the authority, keep doing good and you will have prayers from it.
All right.
So, you understand, Mr. Vickham?
Mm-hmm.
It just shows that the authority and the word, which is the Bible, you don't have a problem with God, you know, sir. Your problem and contention lies with those who are supposed to represent God, sir.
Very nice.
The contention is not with the Bible, not with God.
No.
You are being obedient to God, and very good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is, and that would lead me to tell you, but I want to go to that now, just an interesting thing.
Okay.
But take it up with you next week, all right?
All right, sir, no problem. Take care. Thank you so much for calling. This is Dr. Brass Tax. Good afternoon.
Greetings, Peter.
How hey, Marsha. You got in.
Marathon waiting, right. Boy.
Well, sorry it took so long.
That's okay.
We will let you start now and finish after the break, assuming that it takes more than 3 minutes to cuss me. You had a difficulty with something,
no,
I said, I understand.
I don't want to cuss you. I just want to put an alternative position.
Okay. This is alternative to the flogging?
You are being facetious, and I hope that everybody knows that you're being facetious. Because we have children home on vacation right now, and I really wouldn't want anybody to take your advice to heart and create a situation where any child in Barbados right now is not in a safe space. So I hope people know you as well as I know you to know that you're being very facetious about changing your position on flogging.
But I don't think that children should be beaten. No.
Right, exactly. Good. That's what I wanted you to say.
No, but my position in terms of adults doing foolishness at a time like this.
Good. Okay. And I just wanted you to make sure that the people understood you, because I understand you. It has nothing to do with corporal punishment.
I think you get me. I mean, you generally speaking seem to get me in a way that a number of people don't. Yeah.
All right. So what I wanted to talk about, Peter, you started with, the discussion about the rum shop and that kind of thing. And it is one that is also attracting some attention on Facebook. Now, I'm not here to put a position. Everybody should be home. That's what, you know, the health guidance is right now. Everybody should be trying to do that. But you went to a very interesting place with a caller earlier, and that's the point that I want to expand on, just to make people understand, you know, that this is not it's not a non-complicated time for a lot of people, especially right. The way that
Marcia,
our society is set up.
Yeah, Marcia, we're going to have to stick a pin. Are you still there, Marcia?
I'm here, Peter.
Yes, please carry on.
Right. So what I was saying is that this is not an uncomplicated time for some. As you were outlining with the Spanish flu, some of the same things that you spoke about there also pertain to Barbados. Everybody doesn't have a comfortable space to call home. There's a lot of what we call housed homelessness in Barbados. So somebody does not necessarily belong to a family, or even if they do belong to the family, for whatever reason, they're allowed to perhaps sleep and get a meal, but outside of that, it is not really a home space. Now, like I said, I am in no way encouraging anybody to break the rules. But at the same time, it's a little bit disingenuous for some of us who, as you rightly said, Peter, are in comfortable spaces, to be harsh in the comments that we're making about other individuals whose realities may not mirror our own. The reality is that, you know, you were talking about rum shops this morning. There are some rum shops in Barbados that have a smaller clientele of people who will go at any one given time than households in Barbados. There are some households in Barbados with upward of 20 people living in the same space. So from the perspective now of, you know, somebody who deals with some of those kind of households and things, there needs to be some kind of release. There needs to be some kind of opportunity for those individuals to step outside of that space. There are some people in Barbados who still put down sleep beds and you know, different types of things to make themselves comfortable at night, but then to walk through the house during the day, you have to take that up, okay? I'm not advocating, like I said, for people to leave St. Lucie, as you're saying, and go to town. But we have to make sure that in the management of the shutdown, that we understand some of the real dynamics that we are working with respect to our society and how people in our society live. That's not overstating a point. Domestic violence, sexual violence, research and experience of human crises such as the one that we're currently engulfed in show that those kinds of realities escalate when we're in periods like this. So as we manage the shutdown, we also have to make sure that we manage people's lives in the shutdown. So it's not as simplistic. I mean, I've been seeing people and hearing people go on and on and on about it on Facebook. And while I agree, in principle, we also cannot be simplistic. Yeah. As we move closer into the, I guess, more of a shutdown phase, what then are going to be our mechanisms to make sure that individuals who need support in those very volatile family spaces are going to be able to get the support?
But Marcia, that's where you come in as an NGO.
That is where I come in, but yeah. Here's the joke. Now, of course, we have a network across the Caribbean, as you may know, Peter, of advocates who are talking on a daily basis, comparing what is happening in our spaces. The emergency protection mechanism that was unfolded in Trinidad and Tobago makes NGOs that are known to work with volatile populations a part of essential services. Now, after the lockdown, I'm currently carrying groceries for people. I'm currently managing through some situations, you know, to try to continue to serve the clientele that we usually serve on a daily basis. When this lockdown comes, I have no indication as to if I can continue to offer that kind of support.
Marcia,
we're checking
you'll be
on
able
women.
To.
Well, but I don't. But you. But you're saying that, of course, I will be able to.
But
people,
Marcia,
but I'm
Marcia,
I don't know.
If the Bar Association could get relief from the Attorney General, why should you not be able to?
All I'm saying to you,
if I agreed to assist an elderly person, and I'm prepared to do that, and feel free to call on me if you need any additional support. If I agree to do that, my presumption is that I would also be given certain certain latitude. And I'm saying the impression I've gotten from the Attorney General is not that they're looking to lock up and prosecute people, but that they're looking to make the situation as bearable as possible. So I don't think that you should assume that you won't, because, as I said, the Bar Association got relief. Who's that?
Peter, I'm not assuming anything. What I'm saying to you is that under the legislation that was instituted in the Trinidadian case,
right.
It catered to
right,
all
right.
of this in such a way that there are now much more, what do you say, the response that is being rolled out there seems a lot more coordinated across the government and the civil society.
Agreed, but Marcia, you also appreciate that the NGO community in Trinidad and Tobago is a lot more structured than ours is here. And for that reason, it's possible that we slip through the cracks, but my sense is that if you are committed, and I mean, I have to give both National Organization of Women and the Business of Professional Women's, you know, credit for being organized. If you guys are organized, then I don't see any reason why, if you made an approach to say, look, we need to move around after hours to provide assistance, that you would be charged with breaking the curfew. So I think, honestly, your next call should be to the Office of the Attorney General to raise concerns that there needs to be some level of designation given, because I agree with you and I understand. I have been into one of those spaces that you're talking about where during the day it is it's a space you can walk
at
night, two beds go down and people sleep in those spaces.
Absolutely.
To say to somebody during work time, you need to stay in that house, it creates a problem because there's nothing to do. It's basically just four walls and people watching one another. You know, the only privacy you can have is an outdoor toilet facility.
Very quickly, the only other thing I want to add, because I don't want anybody's weight to be what mine was today.
Mm-hmm.
We also have to make consideration. School has to move, I would figure, to an online platform very shortly.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some forms, as far as I understand, which have gone out to parents based on the children that the school establishes already have need. Put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some households in Barbados which would not be established households for need, but that in a situation where, for example, you might have three different children who will need devices to go online to manage through school, and perhaps a parent or two working from home who will also need devices to work from home. I mean, a lot of that stuff is stuff that we have not thought through. And if classes go back online, you know, we stand to then lose some children in the translation, because the reality is that some parents and some households will be able to manage the cost of automatically getting the additional devices, and some will not. And again, I'm not necessarily saying that I have a solution for that, but I'm just saying that perhaps more engagement with the civil society as we create this national plan and roll it out might be able to help us to move through some of these issues more smoothly and not do what we usually do as Bajan people, which is just to judge people and say, oh, he worthless, he this, he that, et cetera, et cetera, which really doesn't help.
Right.
If we're moving forward and we're looking for solutions, you know, I think there's still a few unanswered questions that we quickly have
I am agreeing with you on that, that the online platforms always require an enablement. And I think that this is a facility that has to be addressed, the ability of people to exploit those platforms. My greater concern where that is concerned is this whole question of the 11 plus exam being deferred to June, right? And the fact that children who have
deferred indefinitely.
Well, that's my thing. Just cancel it altogether. No, because I'm concerned that there are children at home now whose parents and so on have the facility to help them advance on the syllabus, even as they are waiting for this crisis to be over. And they will be in a better position in June than a lot of people who parents don't have that capacity.
Absolutely.
And it again creates a level of unfairness. So I really do feel that they need to reconsider and cancel that exam altogether, because June is too soon.
It is too soon. Yeah. Especially in the context, like I said, of
September may be the time for us to remember. And in October, it will be all over. But June is definitely too soon.
I'm always going to be grateful to Rona for helping us realize in Barbados that, you know, if the common entrance doesn't happen in May, nothing too bad or too out of the ordinary will happen. We will find a way to continue.
Yeah, buying and dead, so
absolutely
I agree.
Absolutely not.
You forget about
all
it.
All right, Peter. I just wanted, like I said, to put that as a consideration. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Marcia. Thanks for raising it. I have to raise another matter which is slightly closer to home. And this is relating to something that persons who are prescribed expensive drugs will be familiar with. It's called a bearer's note. Essentially, it's a note from a doctor that goes directly to a supplier of drugs and asks them to supply these drugs to you on their behalf, essentially, on their behalf to the doctor, which helps you reduce the cost. And as many of you know in Barbados, stuff that's on the formulary, the cost is relatively manageable. Stuff that's not on the drug formulary has a tendency to be very expensive. And there are some classes of drugs that are not on the formulary for obvious reasons. Government doesn't pay for them. And as a result, persons who are prescribed those drugs that are not part of the national insurance system or don't have private health insurance, ultimately they have to pay through the teeth. There's been an accommodation that has been going on for many years where persons with these notes will go directly to the suppliers and would receive these drugs. Apparently, the suppliers have now decided that they are not accepting them anymore. Kind of bad timing, one would think, which means that in addition to all of the other financial burdens that persons who are in those categories have to carry, they will now have to carry the additional cost of drugs, which in some cases can be twice as much money. When you buy these from the drug stores, from the pharmacists. I understand the legal position. The dispensing of drugs should be done by a pharmacist, and there's really no question where that is concerned. But I do think that there is a basis for some kind of conversation, and especially the ministry that has responsibility for elder affairs may want to get involved, because this is something which affects several persons in that category, or several persons that have peculiar illnesses that require drugs that are not on the formulary. I did some research on this issue, and I found that in the United Kingdom, there is less of a problem largely because the formulary is relatively comprehensive, and persons who fall outside of the NHS, invariably, they are small in number and they're covered by private medical insurance. As a result, cost is not an issue. So for them, 95% of their drug dispensing takes place within the context of the formulary, and the other 5% is a highly specialized arrangement. That's not the case in Barbados, and as a result, it exposes several of us to great financial hardship. Clearly, this is an issue that needs to be addressed, and is sadly coming to the fore at this point in time when there are so many other issues of costs that are burdening people. So this is something for all of you to think about. I understand that there is considerable interest in the issue. I've received calls from people already who have said that they are interested in identifying with this issue. We need to see if we can find a solution to it.